26 of 1 Samuel. And you will notice, as we read this, many similarities to another incident of David sparing Saul's life. There are many things, many similarities you will note. However, whenever you compare two similar things, you must also take notice of the differences. When things are similar, it's the differences that oftentimes highlight the important details. And we will see some differences along with the similarities to David sparing Saul once again. So this is God's word for 1 Samuel chapter 26. Now the Ziphites came to Saul at Geba, saying, "Is David not hiding in the hill of Hakkelah opposite Jeshimon?" Then Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him, to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul encamped on the hill of Hakkelah, which is opposite Jeshimon, by the road. But David stayed in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies, and understood that Saul had indeed come. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped, and David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Now Saul lay within the camp, with the people encamped all around him. Then David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with you." So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp, with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. And Abner and the people lay all around him. Then Abishai said to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now therefore, please, let me strike him at once with the spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time." But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said, "Furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head, and let us go." So David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away. And no man saw or knew it, or woke, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. Now David went over to the other side, and stood on the top of a hill afar off, a great distance being between them. And David called out to the people and to Abner, son of Ner, saying, "Do you not answer, Abner?" And Abner answered and said, "Who are you, calling out to the king?" So David said to Abner, "Are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? Why then have you not guarded your lord the king? For one of the people came in to destroy your lord the king. This thing that you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die, because you have not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is, and the jug of water that was by his head." Then Saul knew David's voice and said, "Is that your voice, my son, David?" David says, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." And he said, "Why does my lord thus pursue his servant? For what have I done? Or what evil is in my hand? Now, therefore, please let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is the children of men, may they be cursed before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, 'Go, serve other gods.' So now, do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains." Then Saul said, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly." And David answered and said, "Here is the king's spear. Let one of the young men come over and get it. May the Lord repay every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness." for the Lord delivered you into my hand today. But I would not stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. And indeed, as your life was valued much this day in my eyes, so let my life be valued much in the eyes of the Lord, and let him deliver me out of all tribulation. Then Saul said to David, May you be blessed, my son David. You shall both do great things, and also still prevail. So David went his way, and Saul returned to his place. All right, so as we said, there are many similarities to David sparing Saul's life on another occasion, but here there are some differences. And so many are the similarities that some have speculated this is just a retelling of the same event from a different point of view. That's not the case. There's enough differences. It's a unique story with its own point and its own unique details, but we do see sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? There are certain things that are common to the character of Saul, for instance. Saul struggles with trying to kill David, right? He does want to kill David, and then he is brought to sorrow and repentance, and he doesn't want to kill him, and then he will try to do it again. That kind of is a pattern with Saul. We saw that all the way back when he tried to pin him to the wall with his spear, and then David would play and quiet the spirit or drive the spirit away, and Saul would be in his right mind for a while. And so this is very typical of Saul. Also typical are the Ziphites. The Ziphites go up to Saul. Saul's up in Geba, and the Ziphites go up to him again and say, is David not hiding out in our neck of the woods? And we don't know if they had sort of a standing agreement that they would always go to him, and maybe they are spying for Saul, but whatever the case is, the Ziphites have chosen sides between David and Saul. They've chosen Saul. So they go up to Saul in Geba and tell him that David is there. So just to orientate ourselves, you have a map on page 4. You see probably to the west of the Dead Sea, you see Ziph. And Ziph is, of course, where the Ziphites are from. And they traveled all the way north up to Geba, which is near the number 1 up there in the north. They travel up there to inform that David is in their area. Now, David recently was off to the east on the coast of the Dead Sea in En-Gedi, hiding out there. It was nearby to there that he spared Saul's life in a cave. And then David was recently to the west of there in Carmel and Maon. And so somewhere between Ziph and En-Gedi and Carmel and Maon, somewhere in that region is this hill where Saul is encamped, okay? We don't know exactly where that is, but somewhere in that region there in the wilderness of Ziph. So this is where it's taking place, and this is hill country. This is called wilderness, but remember, this is the Judean wilderness, so this is kind of desert and hilly. And there are there's a hill of Hakalah. So Saul, as is his custom, when he finds out where David is, he gathers an army and goes to kill him. And he encamps there in the wilderness. But here is a difference. The hunter becomes the hunted, right? In the first instance, David stumbled quite by accident across Saul, whom God placed in the very same cave where David was hiding. Now, in this instance, David heard that Saul was coming for him, so he proactively sent out spies to see if that was true. Then he found where Saul was, and then he himself went to investigate, which this happened before the reverse of this. Saul heard that David was hiding out in a place, and he sent men to go kill him, and they failed, and he sent more men, and they failed, and then he came himself, right? Well, now David does that. He sent out spies. He learned where Saul was, so he came to Saul's camp himself. So here's a difference now. David is apparently now pursuing Saul. There's a little bit of a reversal there. And he comes to the camp in verse 5, and he sees Saul there sleeping with Abner near him. And then Saul is mentioned again. There's a lot of detail given here about Saul being situated in the center of the camp with Abner by him and then everyone sleeping around him, and he's very well guarded. I think that's really the point here, is Saul is very well guarded. So this is not like in the cave where Saul is by himself covering his feet, and he's delivered into the hands of David. Here, David has to do something bold and unnecessary in order to get to Saul. And he does that. There's a whole incident of him recruiting men to go with him. He asks if anyone will go with him. And we have Ahimelech the Hittite, about whom we know that he's Ahimelech and he's a Hittite. and that we don't know if he didn't say he would, if he refused to go or what. But he is, I don't believe he's mentioned again. But then we have a man named Abishai, the son of Zariah, brother of Joab. He will feature again in Samuel. Okay, in 2 Samuel, we'll read more about him. And he bravely agrees to go with. So it's sort of like Jonathan and his armor bearer. Remember, just the two of them went to go see what they could accomplish. And as we're reading this, not knowing the end of the story, as we're reading this, we're seeing, I think, that the drama building, thinking maybe this is the time that Saul is delivered into David's hands, right? Because we're seeing a lot of hints at David taking on this bold mission and taking advantage of it. So they enter into the camp. They come at night. Saul is sleeping. A lot of references to his spear. Saul, sort of the symbol of Saul is his spear. Right? David is maybe known for his sling or his sword or his guitar, his harp or lyre or whatever, lyre. But Saul is known for his spear. He is oftentimes pictured holding his spear, you know, and Saul was sitting there holding his spear. Or Saul tried to pin David to the wall with his spear. Or Saul tried to pin Jonathan to the wall with his spear. Saul is known for his spear. And so here it is mentioned. And again, it's said that he's surrounded, quite well protected, but they are sleeping. And so David and Abishai sneak in, and they find that Saul is vulnerable. And so Abishai says to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day." He sees it. He sees the Lord's providence in this. And we saw this before, how God's providence was a temptation to David in the cave. But there's a difference here in that Abishai is saying, okay, you won't kill the king, but what if I kill him for you? That's technically not the same thing, right? So he's saying, God has delivered him into your hands. You won't be guilty of bloodshed. Let me do it. Here's the opportunity. We've come into his camp. He's sleeping. Here's his spear. I'll do it. You won't have to. Moreover, I will just strike him once. I will, and in fact, it says literally pin him to the ground. I will just strike him once, and that's it. And, you know, I know he's a king, so I'm only going to strike him once. And he's making kind of a convincing case here. You know, this would, I think, would have been a further temptation to David. You know, he killed Uriah the Hittite by means of having Joab send him to where the fighting was most fierce. So he was trying to, you know, see how he separated himself from the blood guilt? We do this with sin, right? Like, if we can get some degrees of separation, then we're not as guilty. But by God's grace, David saw this for what it was, and so he refused. And he actually talked Abishai out of it. In verse 9, he says to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" So God's law isn't just for David. It's also for men under David's command. And if David's guilty of striking the Lord's anointed, so would Abishai be. And David, it's interesting, but in this story, Saul is spared from David. Saul is spared from Abishai. David is spared from Saul, but Abishai is also spared. David becomes a means of sparing Abishai by commanding him not to strike the Lord's anointed. So there's a lot of salvation taking place here. All right. Later on, Abishai will repeat a similar thought to David. There's a man named Shimei who curses David. And, you know, Abishai says, let me go and kill this dead dog. Or who's he to talk to you? Who's he to talk to the Lord's anointed this way? And he's probably reflecting back on this. You wouldn't kill Saul because he's the Lord's anointed and he was trying to kill you. This man is cursing the Lord's anointed. I should probably kill him. And David actually in that instance shows mercy, doesn't he? And partly because David was aware of his own sin and so forth. But Abishai remembers this lesson and maybe misapplies it later on, but it stuck. And you see this with your children or others where they get the lesson, but then they need to work out the application of it. And sometimes the application of it is not perfect. And so it's time to reapply and rewrite. And so David does that with Abishai later on. But this is years apart, perhaps. And then in verse 10, David warns that as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. So he says, vengeance belongs to the Lord, right? Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. And David just had a powerful lesson in this with Nabal. David did not murder Nabal, and then God wiped him out. Right? So David had a fresh lesson of how God will avenge. And so he reminds Abishai of that. And then in verse 11, David acknowledges his responsibility. He knows that if he permits Abishai to kill Saul, that he is the one who's ultimately responsible because he is in charge of Abishai. Okay? So he takes responsibility for it. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand. Sort of like the killing of the priest at Nob. We asked, you know, did he really kill all of them by himself, or did he have people underneath him do it? Oftentimes the Bible speaks of one man doing something, but it's done under the representation of whoever his head is. We have this as Christians. Christ is active in the church, but he often does it through means of us, right? We are his instruments. And so Abishai would be David's instrument here, right? And if you look, so he says, if I stretch out my hand in verse 11, the Lord should forbid that I, David, should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. And then he says to Abishai, you please take the spear and jug of water and let us go. And then verse 12 says, so David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head. I think what's trying to be what is being communicated here is it was Abishai who took them as David told him to do. But Abishai's doing it is David doing it because Abishai is under David's command. Therefore, David could not let Abishai kill Saul, partly because that would have been David doing it, okay? All right, but he did use this opportunity. As I'm thinking about David sending out spies to find where Saul was, going into the camp, what was his plan all along? What was he going to do? And I don't know if he knew. Maybe he was thinking he would kill Saul, and then he had a change of heart. I don't know, but he does use the opportunities. He realizes that God has provided an opportunity. But it's not an opportunity to kill Saul. It's an opportunity to show him mercy and have evidence of the mercy he showed him. So he says, grab these things. And grab the water jug and the spear. We're going to make use of this. It's very wise that, okay, so he doesn't slay him, but he does take advantage of this opportunity in order to point out to Saul his error and David's mercy to him. So very wise in his restraint and grabbing the evidence. And we see here this really was God's providence. For in verse 12, they were all asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. So God really did knock him out so that David could go in there and do what he willed. And this phrase, the deep sleep that fell on them, this is the same word that's used for Adam when the Lord put a deep sleep on him so he could take the woman out of him. This is the same deep sleep that Abraham had when the Lord made a covenant with him. This is the same deep sleep that's referenced in the book of Isaiah when the Lord puts a deep sleep on people, like a stupor. Okay, so God really did providentially intervene. So that's how David and Abishai were able to sneak into the camp. And, you know, Saul is all surrounded by his men in the center of the camp. And his Abner is there, his, you know, general or his, you know, chief bodyguard. But God made it so that they couldn't wake up. Until, in verse 13, David goes across another hill and shouts over, and he calls from afar. And here, interestingly, we see a different tone between how David talks to Abner and how he talks to Saul. When he talks to Abner, he mocks him and taunts him and convicts him, right? And when he talks to Saul, he calls him my lord, the king. He, you know, there's a different way. And I puzzled about this, and as I considered it, I really think this is a little bit of a professional rivalry. Right, there's a little, it's a little bit of almost teasing amongst peers. Okay, it's not necessarily malice so much as there's a little bit of respect here, kind of like maybe I don't know. There's a professionalness to it. They are, in fact, we will see in a sense Abner has kind of taken David's place in Saul's kingdom. And almost David took Abner's place, right? Because Abner was there beforehand. Abner was there. Remember, Abner is either the cousin or the uncle of Saul. It's a little bit ambiguous, but he's relative of him, okay? And he was there when Saul was anointed. He was there when Saul was consolidating his power. And then David rose up. And remember, Saul says to Abner, well, who is this man that killed the giant? And Abner says, I don't know who it is. On my life, I don't know who it is. And now it's kind of like David saying, do you know me now, Abner? Do you know me now? What's my name, Abner? In fact, later on, Abner will be killed. And David laments and has sorrow over it. So I think there's a professional respect here, but some rivalry because of the place that they occupy. There's something maybe here. David recognizes Saul is his superior. Therefore, he is deferential to him. Right, therefore he gives him the proper respect. Abner is his peer, so he has a little more latitude with how he talks to him. Someone like Shimei later on is his inferior, and he has a different way of toleration towards him. And there's something, you know, we can learn something from this, how we treat people in our lives, right? We have a certain amount of reverence or respect for those who are our superiors. We maybe have a little more competitiveness or levity with those who are our peers. And then we have more toleration and condescension towards those who are our inferiors, right? You don't want, like, we wouldn't want to see, we would think less of David if we saw him mocking a lesser man, right? It's like picking on the slow kid in class. It's just cruel. So David's not a cruel man, but he is a, he's mocking poor Abner here. Because he's far off, so Abner can't do anything. And the damage has already been done. Abner has no idea. He's just waking up. He's been under anesthesia. And he calls him by name. Right? David calls Abner by name. And then he questions his honor. He insults his manhood. Are you not a man? And then in verse 15, he says, and who is like you in Israel? You're the king's right-hand man. All of this responsibility is on you. You've been given this position of high honor. You've got all the respect of the king. You are in charge. You've got one job, Abner. Protect the king. And you didn't do that. And then he even says to him that he deserves to die. You deserve to die because you did not protect the king. Think of the resurrection of Christ, the Roman soldiers who let him escape the tomb were in fear for their lives, because the rule was if you let a condemned man go, if you fail at your post and something like that, you surrender your life, okay? So this is a similar thing for Abner. That's what David is pointing out to him, is that have forfeited your life because you did not protect your king. You failed as a soldier. So in first half of verse 16, because you've not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed, and then he brings his receipts in verse 16b. And now, see where the king's spear is, and the jug of water that was by his head? And that's when Abner looks and he's like, oh no. He sees that David came in there and grabbed these things. And they had to have been wondering, you know, how did this happen? How did this happen? All right, so after mocking Abner, actually, let me stop for just a minute. Any questions at this point? Yes?
I know we can't prove that David had a plan in advance. So I know it's just speculation. But it just seems that David did have a plan. Because, you know, he sent his spies out and he did... I think it's possible that, like, David didn't want a conflict with Saul. Like, he didn't want other people to lose their lives. So this was a way for him,
yes,
as a leader, to protect those with him.
Yes.
And, like, do an intervention.
Yes.
Before anything got worse.
Yes.
And I would think that, you know, that could possibly have helped him with Abishai. Because it seems like he sort of had a plan, he would not give in to that temptation.
Yeah.
Knowing it was wrong because he already had, you know, like I would say, a righteous plan.
Yes.
You know, in his mind, and then he could stand up to it. And we can't prove it,
but
I just like to think of David that way.
Yeah,
but,
like he
in his best of times.
Yes, he certainly, if he didn't plan that all out, he certainly took what was available in order to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think you're right. He is looking for a way to defuse Saul's pursuit of him. And showing Saul mercy again and being able to prove it is accomplishing that. That's exactly what he accomplished. Yes.
Rick, I was going to say too that he kind of talked smack to Abner.
Yeah.
That even that's a deterrent. It's like, you know, don't, you know, because I think David is very aware here. He's very aware. God wants him to be the king.
Mm-hmm.
God's going to do it in God's time,
mm-hmm.
which might be difficult and frustrating for him, because it's like chapter 27, and obviously it becomes frustrating for him. But at the same time, he's basically trying to say, Abner, don't mess with me. Don't be whispering in Saul's ear to come and get me.
Yes.
I think he's thinking all these kinds of things.
Yes.
You know, I have to do this a certain way, and don't make it. And I don't want it to be harder for me.
Yeah,
it's hard enough as it is. Don't make And so
he's
just doing whatever he can to
to
avoid having to confront or Saul directly or be tempted to kill him.
Yeah,
because like I say, this is the second time he's had the opportunity.
Yes,
and so I just think he's he's just aware. Holding on fast to God's going to make me the king in God's time.
Yeah. Yeah. And think of, from Abner's point of view, not only could David have killed Saul, he could have killed Abner. So in a sense, Abner's life is in his hands. You know, he's saying to him, I could have killed you tonight. And about the mockery, you know, sometimes it is assumed that the Christian can never use mockery. But there is a righteous use of mockery, right? And this is an instance of it. To your point, Bob, he is, by means of this mockery, pointing out the reality. Here's the situation. God is not going to let you kill me, and it's only God who has kept me from killing you. So stop this. Don't be this way. Stop this before somebody gets hurt, right? Yeah, very good. All right, so now Saul wakes up and hears David's voice, and Saul knew David's voice. Of course he did. David used to sing for him, right? Is that your voice, my son, David? Curious about that, that Saul at different times calls David that son of Jesse, and other times, my son. And that's one of the themes in the book of 1 Samuel is the son. Who is the king's son? And David is son of Jesse, son of Saul, type of the son of God. And Saul at times calls him his son, particularly when he spares his life. Saul is somewhat fickle. And then David responds, verse 18, why does my Lord thus pursue his servant? David still regards himself as a servant of Saul. And it's true, he has not yet thrown off the yoke, right? He has not yet betrayed Saul. He has done nothing to break his role as a servant to Saul, even though Saul is pursuing him. This is maybe, someone recently asked if, I guess this was at a men's roadshow, but we talked about conscience and how someone doesn't have the right to command you to do something contrary to the law of God. And they don't even have a right to command you to do something God doesn't require if, in your conscience, you can't do it without sinning. So like a government, for instance, they can't command you to do something that is unlawful. And they can punish you if you disobey. But you're not sinning. But they still have the power to punish you because they bear the sword, and they could be tyrants, and they could... So if you, you know, if they made a silly law, or not a law, a press release, or a mandate, or something like that, and told you to do something that you, in your conscience, don't want to do, you can sinlessly refuse to do that. But you do so knowing that you may suffer for it, because your government is wicked, right? So you make that choice. And they will be wrong in punishing you for doing good, but you still may suffer for it. So then the question is, okay, if I'm going to suffer unjustly, may I flee that suffering? Do I have to just submit to it? Do I just have to, in every instance, if someone's seeking my life, do I have to lay down like a lamb to slaughter? The example of David shows us, no, you don't. Saul had the sword. Saul was a tyrant to David. Saul pursued David. David did not permit Saul to kill him. David fled. David strategized. David did things to preserve his life. So in every instance, you as a Christian don't have to give them your neck. Okay, the Lord Jesus did that because he came to be a sacrifice. But you know, there are other instances when people pursued Jesus and sought his life, and he escaped. Right? So as a Christian, then you don't... So if you have a lawful means of escape, run away or defend yourself or something like that, that's available to you. Now, there may be times, and think of Christian martyrs, where you just, there is no escape, and then you just entrust yourself to the Lord and let them take your life, right? But if you have the opportunity to escape or defend or anything, that's available to you. All right. So David has these questions. Why are you pursuing me? This is very similar to before. What evil have I done? He's reminding Saul that he's wasting his time coming after him. What evil have I done? Why are you, you know, you're going to punish me, but I've not sinned against you. And then he says, if the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. I think David is saying that if God has sent you to kill me, well, then I give myself, right? I will be an offering to God. I will surrender my body to the flames for God. But if it's the other case and it's men who are stirring you up against me, maybe Abner, right? Someone, if it's men, well, then let God deal with them, right? If it is the children of men, may they be cursed before the Lord. And then look at his rationale here. For they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. David has been on the run, remember? And he even had to go to places outside of Judah. He even had to go to Moab, and he had to go to the wilderness, and he had to go to these places. So he's cut off from the land and from the people of God and from the worship of God. So I don't know that they literally said to him, but he also went and hid well with the Philistines. So I don't think they literally said to him, go serve other gods. But that's sort of the practical effect of it. If you take a man from his homeland and from the church and from his inheritance and put him out, what are you are exposing him to worship other gods. And so that's David's big complaint, is that it's not just that he's fearing for his life, it's that they are taking from him his worship of God and making him be tempted or surrounded by other gods. Right. So here's his request, don't kill me. Verse 20. So now do not let my blood fall on the earth before the face of the Lord. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea. And he's pointing out his insignificance. You brought 3,000 men to come kill me and my merry band, right? That's really a tremendous waste of resources. You shouldn't be troubling yourself with this. I'm just a flea. I'm not anyone to you. And then he again professes his innocence, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains. Think of a partridge, right? A dove, a bird. It doesn't fight back. And Saul is hunting after this partridge, and David is just this partridge. And there's a little bit of humor here in that David is standing on a hill opposite, calling out in the night, you know, calling out to them. So he's like singing, you know, like a partridge, like a canary. They're calling, and then Saul is trying to find him. In fact, the word that Abner uses, like, who is this that calls out to the king, is like a bird calling. And so David brings that back up. And kind of, you know, like, by the way, Abner, you know, he throws in another jab at him. Okay. So then Saul, in verse 21, relents. And he confesses again, I have sinned, return, my son, David, for I will harm you no more. Because my life was precious in your eyes this day, indeed I have played the fool and erred exceedingly. So in Saul's words, we have a confession of his sin, and a promise not to kill him again, an invitation, tells him to return, come back home, all is forgotten. And then he gives him his reason. It's because you spared me. It's a very sound argument, and it seems contrite. And maybe it is. I think there are times when Saul really was sorry, and he really thought he wasn't going to try to kill David again. I don't know if he could just be lying here, but nevertheless, it doesn't matter to David at this point. In verse 22. David's answer to Saul is very terse. He says, here's the king's spear. Let one of the young men come over and get it. Like, I'll stay here. You stay there. I won't fire if you send, you know, a chaplain or someone else to come and get it. Right? We'll cease fire. We'll let them come and grab it. And that's it. And then he reminds him that the Lord will repay. May the Lord repay every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. Okay, David is being righteous and faithful. Saul, you just said you're not going to try to kill me anymore. Let God keep you to that. And let God judge you if you don't. And then he professes his faith in the Lord. And let my life be valued in the eyes of the Lord, and let him deliver me out of all tribulation. So he doesn't have to trust Saul. He doesn't have to rely on Saul's word. He's going to be prudent, he's going to be wise, and he's going to entrust himself to the Lord to deliver him from Saul. So at this point, David and Saul part. Saul blessed David, as he has done a few times before. There's a proverb that says that the the neighbor who blesses you early in the morning will prove unreliable or will curse you later on. And I think maybe sometimes that's what Saul, he's effusive in his praise of David, but then later on takes it back. And this is, as a pastor, you have interactions with people in the church, and I can tell you that some of the people who were most complimentary to me when I first came to Providence ended up hating my guts the most. Right? So they praised me in the morning and cursed me in the evening. It just, that's how it goes. But beware of that. If someone is uncharacteristically or very quickly praising you and flattering you, just wait a little while and see how that lasts. Just give it some time. Right? Don't be taken in. And that's, David in this case is not taken in with Saul that way. And so then David went his way, and Saul returned to his place. That phrase, returned to his place, is used other times. I think it's used of Judas. He went to his own place. It's not good. It's not good. This will be the last time that David and Saul interact. The next time that David deals with Saul will be when Saul is dead. Okay? All right. So that's the kind of the closing of David and Saul.